Our next case this morning is number 051417, Donna Patti against Joanne Barnhart, the Commissioner of Social Security. Mr. Daly.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Frederick Daly. I'm appearing for the plaintiff appellant, Donna Patti. The rule in this circuit regarding hypotheticals when there are mental limitations is that all mental limitations that are supported by substantial evidence in the record must be included in the hypothetical. In Young versus Barnhart, this court held that it was error for the administrative law judge to not include the temperamental impairments that he had, such as it was considered that he had a tendency to get angry. He also had moderate limitations in his ability to get along with coworkers and supervisors and the public.
Mr. Hill, could you just remind me of something? During the administrative proceeding below,
I don't think it was challenged. I think the ALJ gave his hypothetical at step five. It's the burden of the government at step five to prove that there are other jobs that the individual can perform.
Was there a challenge to the finding on the ground that the hypothetical failed to include limitations imposed by the mental health impairment?
No, I don't think there's any challenge, Your Honor.
None,
no. I believe that
isn't that the usual way to proceed if there's a hypothetical question is asked of a witness and you believe that it fails to include an important fact? Isn't that something then that's explored by, say, cross-examination? Would your answer be different if this was an actual fact in the case?
That is often done. It can be done, but I don't think it necessarily has to be done at step five. For instance, the plaintiff, the claimant in the case, may have a theory like here that the combination of impairments, including her fibromyalgia and back impairments, were so severe. And the need to go to the bathroom was in her case, too. She had a long history of diarrhea and urination problems, irritable bowel syndrome. And I think the focus of the case was that she could not do any work, and they were pointing out that she was currently working. And the current job she had was working for her sister, who let her take breaks when she needed to. She'd work one day and then take a day off, and she had sympathetic work. And I think that was generally the focus, that her impairments.
But you agree with the general proposition that a deficiency in a hypothetical question can be cured by further questioning of the witness.
It can be.
Of that,
it can be, and we don't know. Oftentimes it appeared here that the administrative law judge wasn't considering any of the moderates, considering any of the mental limitations that were significant. He was, in fact, his hypothetical contained no mental limitations at all. And he seemed to feel that this individual could perform simple, unskilled work.
But was the vocational expert who offered this opinion present when the medical deficiency evidence was offered?
Yes, he was present throughout the whole hearing, as far as I can see.
So he was aware of these mental difficulties.
He's aware of it, but he's only responding, as this court held in Young and some other cases, Steele, I think it was, he's only responding in those cases to the hypothetical. The hypothetical specifically set out the parameters. Besides lifting 20 pounds occasionally and 10 pounds frequently, it said needs a sit-stand option. In terms of the work they do, and experiences only limited use of the right hand. That was it. There's no reference at all to the mental limitations. In fact, when you look at the actual findings of the administrative law judge, in the record at page 27, finding number 5, the administrative law judge finds, instead of sit-stand option, for instance, he finds no prolonged standing or walking. That's not in the hypothetical. Nor any repetitive use of the right hand. That's not in the hypothetical.
Can we go back to the mental health? Because the VA, the VE, were present for the testimony regarding Patty's mental health, correct?
The VE was present, yes.
Right. And, you know, I mean, an ALJ can rely on VE testimony, even when you've got an incomplete case medical, if a record supports a conclusion that it be considered the medical reports and documents. Isn't that correct?
Well, I think not really. The vocational experts really do confine their answers, Your Honor, to the hypothetical. They do not go outside of it. In fact, here, if you notice at the hearing, the administrative law judge asked the medical expert, and what about her ability to respond appropriately to supervision of coworkers? And the answer was there was evidence that she got more depressed, and with her pain she had increased irritability. So I think there is a suggestion that she will have some difficulty with anger occasionally in the workplace. Well, the hypothetical didn't include any mental limitations, so it can't be said that the vocational expert considered any of them. The administrative law judge was focusing more on unskilled work and even semi-skilled work at the low level. So I know his hypothetical just did not include what I had just mentioned, nor did it include the vast number of moderate impairments that were in the residual functional capacity assessment of the consultative examiner, Dr. Warrior, who also had that same moderate that was in Young of the ability to, a moderate difficulty in getting along with coworkers and working in the proximity of coworkers and getting along with supervisors, well, along with eight other significant moderate mental limitations.
Let me just get this right. Our case law does say that an ALJ can rely on the testimony even if it's in response to an incomplete hypothetical, doesn't it?
There are some cases, but it seems the more recent cases like Young and Steele are noticing that the vocational expert is responding strictly to the hypothetical that's presented to him and is not going outside of that hypothetical. I don't know in this case if the vocational expert examined the whole record. In some instances, they do not. They appear and then they're asked a hypothetical, but they've heard the testimony, but they haven't examine the record. So
I will agree with you that our more recent cases do note that the hypothetical that's posed to a VA ordinarily must include all limitations. So I will agree with you on that.
I believe that a reading of this transcript will show that the vocational expert did limit himself strictly to the hypothetical and that no mental limitations were included. When you contrast that with the findings, that's error of law.
Mr. Daly, are there are any of the more lenient cases from this circuit, do they involve situations as we have here where the matter left out of the hypothetical by the ALJ was a mental impairment?
Yes.
There are cases like that?
Yes.
We have been lenient about that?
Well, lenient as far as the all mental limitations were.
Are there cases where we have excused, if you want, a ALJ from asking a partial hypothetical question? And when what he has left out has been a mental impairment?
Yes, as far as I know, in the Young case, the ALJ did not include the complete hypothetical. I mean, he didn't include all of the facts that were found.
And the part he omitted had to do with the individual's mental health?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That's what I needed to know.
And Steele also, part of that was, and Kosarski. Thank you.
Mr. Sanchez.
May it please the Court, Alfred Sanchez, appearing on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. Good morning, Your Honors. Before I address specific issues raised by Ms. Patty, I would like to highlight an important consideration in this case. And of critical importance to this case is that Ms. Patty bore the burden through step four of the five-step sequential evaluation, proving that she was incapable of performing her past relevant work. The ALJ did not prove and satisfy her burden of proving that she was unable to perform her past sedentary, semi-skilled work. And moreover, the ALJ found that there were a significant number of other jobs, of unskilled jobs, that Ms. Patty remained capable of performing. Because substantial evidence supports the ALJ's decision, the Commissioner respectively requests this Court to affirm the ALJ's decision.
What evidence do we have that the vocational expert considered the medical records and evidence regarding her mental impairment?
Well, Your Honor, as you indicated, the VE was present during the entire testimony. The VE heard Ms. Patty's testimony, and was also there was also a medical expert at the hearing who also testified. I would note that in the hypothetical question, in response to the hypothetical question, the VE identified numerous jobs, 70,000 jobs that Ms. Patty would be able to perform. Upon questioning as to the skill level of those jobs, the VE testified that those would be unskilled jobs. At that point, it became unnecessary for the ALJ to inquire into specific limitations because there were 70,000 unskilled jobs that existed that Ms. Patty could perform. And I would note that this case is really about distractions. Ms. Patty's brief attempts to blur the distinction between the B criteria finding that are used at steps 2 and 3 to assess the severity level of a claimant's impairments in four broad functional areas, being the first being social activities, the second being social functioning, the third being concentration, persistence, and pace, and the fourth being episodes of decompensation. Those are used at steps 2 and 3 to assess severity, determine whether or not an individual has a severe mental impairment and whether or not that impairment rises to the level of meeting or equaling a mental impairment.
Yeah, but I want to go back to what evidence. For instance, do we know if the vocational expert reviewed reports from the therapist, the Tavril, or the psychologist, Dr. Mondovan, Dr. Wolf?
Well, we do know that the ALJ asked vocational expert, have you had the opportunity to review the file for the claimant in this matter? And the VE responded, yes. And have you been present for a testimony today? Yes. And the VE also heard the testimony of the medical expert who testified that Ms. Patty only had mild limitations for broad areas of functioning. So the VE was aware of the evidence in the record and was aware of the testimony and that of the medical expert in determining what jobs were available. The ALJ also made a finding at step four that Ms. Patty remained capable of performing her past work. Her past work was a quality control inspector, and
did the ALJ err by failing to adhere to the requirements of Section 1520A regarding, you know, how an ALJ should determine whether a mental impairment is severe?
Well, the regulations say that the decision must include a specific finding as to the degree of limitation in each of the four functional areas. Reading the ALJ's decision, though, shows that he specifically articulated his analysis of the evidence as it related to Ms. Patty's mental capacity. And I think it demonstrates that he properly evaluated her mental impairments under 4.4.15.28. Specifically, there's a conversation between the medical expert and the ALJ at the hearing that addresses each of the four broad functional areas. And this occurs at pages 76 through 79 of the transcript. And in his decision, the ALJ specifically mentions that the medical expert testified that Ms. Patty only had mild limitations in each of these four areas, and that he concurred with the, with these findings. Now, Ms. Patty seems to argue that the ALJ was required to restate his conversation with the medical expert in his decision. But I think the ALJ's articulation here is sufficient such that the path of his reasoning can be traced. For his conclusions as to the degree of limitation, Ms. Patty's degree of limitation, the four areas are reflected in the ALJ's decision. And he made clear to the degree to which he thought she was limited. So for this reason, I don't think that it was clearly reversible error. The ALJ made clear to the extent she was limited and ultimately concluded that she did not have a mental impairment that met or equal to listing, and there is no evidence in the record to suggest otherwise. So upon his conclusion of steps 2 and 3, he properly proceeded determining her mental residual functional capacity. And in evaluating the medical evidence, including the opinion, the testimony of the medical expert that Ms. Patty only had mild limitations in the four broad areas, in conjunction with the state agency psychologist's opinion that Ms. Patty could perform unskilled types of work, as well as the evaluation findings of Dr. Wolf, the ALJ reasonably found that Ms. Patty could perform unskilled work and was capable of doing a little bit more when he found that she had the mental capacity for simpler routine types of tasks of an unskilled to semi-skilled nature. I go back to the B criteria. Ms. Patty attempts to blur distinction between the B criteria and the ALJ's RFC finding. The B criteria just represent general degrees of limitation in the four broad areas, determine the severity and whether it meets or equals. It by no means constitutes mental RFC assessment. Ms. Patty also blurs distinction between Section 1 the state agency physician's mental RFC assessment. Section 1 is merely a worksheet. It's a checklist, and that's what it is, where it's designed to aid the state agency psychologist in determining the degree and presence of a mental impairment and the adequacy of documentation. In this case, Dr. Royer checked off her preliminary impressions on the worksheet, and then later in a separate form titled MRFC, wrote down her conclusions as to Ms. Patty's mental abilities, and she found that she was currently capable of sustaining unskilled types of work. Notably, in this form, she also notes that her concentration and attention are intact for simple tasks, and she also notes that she is not seen as having significant difficulty relating to supervisors or coworkers. So. Ms. Patty seems to argue that all 20 factors in the checklist of Section 1 need to be included in the RFC, and the case law simply does not support that. There would be a radical departure from the regulations and case law. Rather, the ALJ did what he was supposed to do. He went through all the evidence of record, weighed that evidence, weighed the medical sources' opinion, and viewed all the evidence into totality in determining Ms. Patty's mental residual functional capacity. In doing so, he determined that she was able to do unskilled work, but was able to do a little bit more, and he found that she was able to do unskilled to semi-skilled types of tasks, simply routine types of tasks. And Ms. Patty argues that these 20 limitations of the B criteria or the mental Section 1 findings need to be included in the RFC. As I've said, that is inaccurate, and the limitations of the RFC are to be included in the hypo rather than the general limitations of the mental RFC in Section 1 and the B criteria. That would also be inaccurate. Here, the ALJ properly determined her mental abilities and found that she can do her past relevant work, and ultimately found that there were 70,000 other jobs, unskilled jobs, that she could do. Do you have any further questions?
Apparently not. Thank you, Mr. Sanchez. We'll hear Mr. Daly. You have 1 minute for rebuttal.
First of all, regarding the vocational expert having the administrative record to review at the hearing, I doubt it very much. I know Judge Roden is not here, but this record is 544 pages. I do hearings every week. I never see a vocational expert sitting there with the size with the whole record at a hearing. They will come into the hearing office, have maybe 3, 4, 5 hearings that they're going to attend that day, get the records, look at them for maybe 5 or 10 minutes each, and then walk in at the hearing. There's no way that the for $100 per hearing that a vocational expert is going to sit there and go through a record that size. It took me over a day to go through it. So the answer is with the vocational expert is that he may say that he reviewed the file, but he's confined to the hypothetical question. He cannot possibly consider every piece of medical evidence in the record. Concerning the 70,000 jobs, that's not jobs that Ms. Patty can do. That's jobs that the hypothetical individual can do. And you look at that hypothetical, and it doesn't even come close, even to the judge's own findings, as I mentioned before. So therefore, I think that... For the reason stated that this case should be reversed.
Thank you, Mr. Daly. Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel, and that case will be taken under advisement.